host, Mike Harbath, with this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from World Headquarters, Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. Revenue Rocket is the premier M&A and growth strategy champion for IT services companies worldwide. Today, joining me on the podcast are my partners, Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart. Guys, welcome.
Hey, Mike.
We are today going to be talking about custom application development trends and outlook. We certainly have a big percentage of our work and our customer base are folks that do custom dev. And, you know, Matt, I know from your background, certainly you spent the lion's share of your career with a firm that did custom application development. And today we wanted to just share a few salient facts about that part of the IT services landscape. And as such, I'm going to turn it over to Ryan to get rolling.
Thanks, Mike. I'm really happy to have Matt here on the call here today. He spent a good few decades in this space, and I'd love to pick your brain a little bit on this. So when we think about our categories of companies that we deal with, we think about application integrators, think a Microsoft-type partner. We have cybersecurity vendors, we have MSPs, but one of the ones that we come back to quite a bit is custom application developers. And Matt, I'd love for you, just help me out, to define what a custom application development firm is.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Ryan. And wow, a few decades. I started in business at about 7 years old. So that few decades puts me, right about where I want to be. So, thanks for that. No, kidding. Custom app dev. I mean, it's been called that for, literally decades. And in the context of, all these sort of hot properties in the IT services space. We talked last about cybersecurity and managed service providers are really hot. Custom application development spans all of this, right? And so when we think about the overall breadth of custom app dev, I think maybe let's kind of change the term to custom solutions, right? And it is wherever, software is being written, to differentiate an organization's, offering to the marketplace and or to make them more efficient and improving the bottom line. And so, there's sort of the traditional line of business custom applications. There are front end and or commerce B2B or B2C applications. There's, in the custom solution space, there's heavy data analytical applications that are creating greater insights into, the trends for the business, their customers' buying patterns, so on and so forth, the operational efficiencies within the business. The emerging space around machine learning and or artificial intelligence is very much in the custom solution space. IoT is certainly in there. I think that one of the things that we've seen a tremendous increase in this space is overall application modernization, which certainly fits within the overall custom solution space. And that's largely driven by the push to the cloud, which is a more secure environment. It's a more operationally effective environment and cost-effective environment. And yet all of the legacy applications need to be modernized to take advantage of that new cloud infrastructure. It's really a pretty broad and probably continues to be the largest subsector within the overall IT services marketplace. And that's not going to go down anytime soon. 10, 15 years ago, you know, the term software is eating the world emerged, and that really continues. And, you know, end clients, be it enterprise customers, middle market, and even small and medium businesses are differentiating themselves because of their effective use of custom software solutions. So hopefully that helps, Ryan. I know it is still a broad space, but, you know, we have to incorporate all of that when we think about, you know, custom software solutions.
Ed, it's fascinating. I think maybe even 10 years ago, if you thought custom application development, it was that line of business, maybe writing a chunk of code for an enterprise type system. And that has greatly evolved to UX, UI, through DevOps, including all the coding in the middle. And that can be on a mobile device, it could be on a desktop, it could be through all sorts of apps. So this category that we find someone representing in this space, it's a really hard definition challenge, because it can be something as big as ML and AI, or it could be as specific as application modernization, and it's difficult to say, hey, this is what I do, because the scope is so large. Very interesting. I wonder if I'd love for you to help me also understand, Matt. Have you seen a change in delivery methodologies in the last few years? And I'm going to kind of frame this up of staff augmentation versus product teams versus project teams or pay per sprint models. What changes have you seen in the last few years that may be impacting how companies work?
Sure. I think that's a great question, Ryan. And, you know, let's kind of unpack it first by talking about the needs of end customers, right? And so, again, if custom solutions are a differentiator for an organization, then, you know, an enterprise's customers, right, are expecting, you know, the very best in their interaction, you know, through technology, be it through a mobile app or through a website or through a variety of interactions. Shoot, you know, they show up on Apple Watches. And being able to refresh that experience for end customers, for end users, is absolutely critical. So, you know, the revs of new applications and or updates to applications is really critical for an enterprise customer or any customer to differentiate themselves. Okay, so if you understand that, right, then you think about, how do I build the capability of being better at delivering software on a more agile and more frequent basis? And, you know, many enterprise customers have recognized that working in traditional models, you know, be it a high staff augmentation or trying to do all the work themselves, you know, just doesn't work. Because, you know, say you're a retailer, or you're a manufacturer, or, you know, you're a distributor, you know, building great software isn't necessarily your core competency. And so they need to work with organizations in software delivery organizations in different ways. And much more you are finding a project-based method, you know, where they're working with a key partner on a product management, product development mentality. It's oftentimes in an agile-based method. You know, they're tracking their sprints very well. They're aligning on priorities and changing priorities on an ongoing basis. And so, yeah, the delivery methods have changed. I think that, you know, for our customers in the custom app dev space, what we see is the strongest, the winners, have built in a very strong agile methodology. They've got very strong UI, UX leadership skills. they, you know, to the extent that they've got very strong product management and product owner skills, they're very strong with DevOps. They've got, you know, really good cloud native engineering skills, right? And they're able to bundle all of those skills in an effective and repeatable project-based method. So they're in a very strong leadership position, you know, with their customers. And that makes them very sticky, right? You know, typically custom application development isn't delivered in a, you know, monthly recurring, you know, revenue model, right? It just doesn't work that way in a project-based method. And in the past, you know, firms, when they're assessing custom app dev or custom solution shops, you know, would sort of look at that as a negative, right? Because it's not in an MRR, monthly recurring revenue model. The fact of the matter is if the strongest custom solution firms, when they are in a leadership position with their customers, well, you know, those customers don't go away, right? And so in effect, they are, you know, they're, you know, re-signing year over year with those strong custom solutions firms.
Yeah, it's absolutely so interesting. It's not necessarily MRR, but, and we have seen companies that do do something. So we've seen a pay per sprint method, but to your point, the variability can go up or down based on the sprint. But if you do a great job, you execute well, your experience portfolio grows, those customers continually come back. So it may not. Yes, you may not be charging them a fixed amount per desktop, but you are getting them to building the application and hopefully some kind of maintenance and services on top of that that allows them to build a full life cycle of offerings. I'd love to also know, what impact have you seen from COVID? And it seems we've seen a lot of remote work being adopted. I'd love to get your perspective on are firms adopting new methodologies. For example, is our nearshore trends or rural sourcing or other type of methodologies, what kind of trends do you see coming? I'll open that up to Matt or Mike to answer that.
Well, Mike, I'll jump in, and then I think that you've got great perspective on this. You know, obviously COVID forced a change for all of us in which we were all working virtually in a distributed manner. And that's had a really tremendous impact on the overall software development custom solutions industry where, it's opened up, you know, really a global marketplace for talent. Now, at the same time, there's still way more work than there are talented software development engineers and professionals to do all of that work. And so because it sort of forced, you know, a new paradigm of working virtually and in a distributed manner, I think it's really opened up the ability for firms wherever they are to, you know, to organize that talent and offer that talent. And again, I'll go back. The best firms organize it in a repeatable and efficient way, regardless of where the resources are. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, thanks, Matt. I would tell you that, you know, what we've seen as an interesting trend has certainly been nearshore firms and their really remarkable expansion of providing talent to firms in North America. You know, LATAM, the LATAM market, you know, Mexico, Latin America and South America have certainly, their businesses have expanded dramatically, I think as a direct correlation to what's happened through the pandemic. Now, when we look at other areas of the world, as you listeners know, you know, we work around the world and certainly a similar trend has occurred in other markets. And so we've seen, you know, markets where there's been a high concentration of talent, whether that be in India or Eastern Europe, impacting markets in their regions near more close to their own time zones. in expanding dramatically. There's been a fascinating correlation between the work opportunities have occurred in what we'll call more near time zones than what would be traditionally more of an offshore model. And so that certainly has transitioned the business. And I think also it has given some flexibility in the way if we look more at, you know, domestic firms or firms in North America from our perspective, you know, flexibility in their hiring and management and challenge them in some ways in their management of where staff reside. Some of our larger clients that have, you know, many offices in the U.S. have had staff that work on development and do custom development actually just kind of up and move away from those office locations and choose to continue to work remote. And because they're in such high demand, they've said to their employers that we will not be coming back to the office. We will be working remote. We're happy to work with you. But if that's not okay, then we'll find a firm where it is okay. And I think it's certainly changed the work dynamic and changed the, you know, I know this is happening in other sectors, but we've seen it amplified, if you will, from my perspective in custom app dev.
I totally agree. I think the acceptance of remote work has pushed, allowed companies to embrace outsourcing. And the other part is there is a global need for good talent right now. So I would love to get, Mike, your perspective on some, I'm going to switch the table a little bit here. What's the life cycle for custom solutions firm in M&A right now? Like, is this market hot? Is this delayed? Is it, and kind of set the stage there. And then I'd love to get into what are pluses for valuation and minus for valuation if you're looking to take your firm to market.
Yeah, I would say it's as active as we've ever seen it for custom application or custom solutions companies, Matt, as you put it, in at least my memory. And I would say that also includes the late 90s. So it's exceptionally active. It is a seller's market. It has driven valuations up. We're certainly seeing, you know, multiples reaching peaks for firms that are well run and profitable and growing. I think what's important to understand is that if you have built a quality business, and quality is defined as one that is growing in the top quartile and is profitable above average, right? You will have a lot of interest and a lot of demand and a lot of opportunities should you want to do a transaction as a seller. I think if I put my buy side hat on, certainly there's a lot of competition for acquiring those firms. Some of that's driven by firms' desire to just have the talent. As you know, you mentioned, Ryan, there's certainly a big talent gap. There is far more work, as you mentioned, Matt, than there is talent to do the work. And some firms are kind of, you know, approaching that and trying to solve for that by acquiring firms and thus, again, amplifying the seller's market for custom solutions companies. I think firms that have figured out some labor arbitrage, and particularly those, as I mentioned earlier, in the nearshore market, are even hotter. Ones that are certainly in demand. I think many of the traditional custom solution shops that had tried to staff their business in their office and or domestically before the pandemic have realized that if we're going to have a remote workforce model, then let's certainly embrace a way to have a more nearshore or more cost-efficient labor theory or model. And that's driving margins up for those companies, which certainly makes them also more attractive. So, you know, I think that, you know, we're seeing kind of interesting multiples in these businesses. As you guys know, we've often said that multiples are sort of a 6 to 8 range of trailing 12-month EBITDA. We're certainly seeing deals that are for custom firms that are best in class, you know, at or exceeding eight. And it certainly depends on the buyer. And I'm always hesitant to quote multiples because multiples are not valuations and valuations aren't multiples. So, you know, you need to be sensitive to that. But if we're simply using it as a benchmark, we certainly see accelerating multiples in a hot market.
Hey, you know, Mike, I think that you bring up a really important point. And, you know, we could be seen as sort of self-serving to say you should have a strong acquisition strategy in this space. But let's break it down to the reality, which is there is such it's so lopsided in, you know, the basic supply and demand equilibrium. So that for a firm to achieve, you know, top quartile in revenue growth in this space, well, it directly equates to their ability to bring on more talent. And doing that just organically, because it's such a competitive space for that talent, is really, really hard. Right. And so, yeah, whether or not you choose to work with Revenue Rocket in this space, you know, there's other firms out there. Now we're really good because this is our specialty and specialization is key. We just really believe that now more than ever, having an ongoing acquisition strategy in this space is a competitive differentiator. And now that's not to say that you're not going to not continue to grow organically. You know, one of the things that I did in the past was really further a, you know, hiring new grads out of school and building that talent and building that culture so that you're able to retain those individuals. I do that too. But having an ongoing acquisition strategy in this space, it just makes sense, and doing it well is a competitive differentiation. And quite honestly, you see the smartest money out there doing that.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, Matt. If you're looking for that next stage of growth, M&A is a great way to do it. We've seen some interesting trends lately in that. You don't necessarily have to be a custom solution provider today to acquire a custom solution provider. So MSPs are looking for ways to add cloud lift and shift to their portfolio and provide more holistic solutions. We've seen a bit of that. We've seen just talent gaps being filled through acquisition. So almost acqui-hire, but it's a great way to bring developers into the fold. And then we've just found that a lot of firms that are in this custom application development space have amazing technology process and people that are that are better than what an enterprise may have itself. So the ability to put that talent to work quickly is such a accelerator. I'd love to hear what makes a firm more attractive in this space for acquisition. Matt, are there a few things that would make a firm really stick out or may add a plus in the EBITDA multiplier?
Yeah, I mean, the maturity in their delivery model, the maturity of an organization and their track record and ability to attract talent. Come on, Ryan, it's a lot of the basics that are done and fundamentals that are demonstrated really well. And that results in, you know, seeing the type of contract models that a firm has. You know, that's the proof in the pudding. And then you go to their effectiveness of running their operation just like anybody else. And that, you know, comes through in their both ability to drive gross margin and net margin while at the same time growing. And then at the end of the day, and we just talked about this last night, guys, it's all about the management of a firm and demonstrating, you know, management excellence, not just at the very top, you know, but throughout the organization. So many of it is the fundamentals that we see in all good firms. But, you know, because of the growing need to have, you know, best in class delivery model capabilities, you know, and I think you make a good point, Ryan, from an agile delivery method and being able to contract along those lines, having a sustained delivery model and some level of maintenance and support. And then at the end of the day, again, it goes back to talent. And so being able to recruit and retain the very best talent is a winning proposition these days.
That's great. That's the questions I've got for you guys today. Mike or Matt, any closing thoughts?
Well, I'm just waiting for, you know, Mike to close us out. And so, Mike, how do we do that?
Thanks, Matt. Well, as you hear in every week's podcast, it's time to tie a ribbon on it. So we're going to do that, get you guys back to your work and your lives. Feel free to tune in next week for more sort of interesting and thought-provoking topics on mergers and acquisitions and growth strategies for IT services companies. Thanks, and make it a great day.